Chapter 23. Blood Price. Obsidian Way. A God Amongst Men.
"So this is the best defence our father could muster?" said Mortarion as bolter shells punched the walls of glassy rock beside him.
The Death Lord snapped off a pair of eye-wateringly bright shots from the lantern. Axemen didn't see if they hit, but it was safe to assume the 13th Legion were two warriors fewer.
"A few petty cantrips and a handful of legionaries?"
Axemen heard the Death Lord's disdain, decades in the making, but even in the heat of battle he couldn't let the comment go unremarked. Not after the blood he had shed. Not after so many warriors under his command had died.
"That's not all he left," snapped Axemand as a grenade thrown back along the passageway detonated with a compressed bang. "He left millions of men and tanks. He left armies the Sons of Horus fought and crushed. What did the Death Guard do? Razed a jungle and massacred a defeated enemy."
Mortarion regarded Axemand with a scrutiny a man might give an upstart child. His fingers tightened on silence. Those Death Shroud, who weren't shooting along the passageway, took a step towards Axemand until Mortarion waved them back.
"You might once have been a true son, little Horus," said Mortarion, his voice a low, rasping growl, "but look in the mirror. You're no Sejanus anymore."
Axemand leaned out to shoot. A blue helm vanished in a fan of ceramite and blood.
"What has that to do with anything?"
The Death Lord leaned in close, his words for Axemand alone.
"It means that you think you're special. You're nothing. It means that, Mournival or not, I'll end you if you speak that way again."
"Lupercal would kill you."
"My brother would be displeased at your death, but he would forgive me. You'd still be dead, though."
Horus appeared at Axeman's side with a feral grin of anticipation, making him seem younger and more vital than ever. He leaned out into the passageway and unleashed a roaring blaze of fire from his gauntlet-mounted bolters.
"There will be others,"
said Horus, ducking back into cover as an interlocking pair of bipod-mounted heavy bolters raked the passageway.
"Father wouldn't rely on mortals to keep his secret. He'll have a failsafe of some kind."
"All the more reason for you to let me send Grulgor up there,"
said Mortarion over the hammering impacts and detonations of explosive munitions.
"He'll end this quickly."
Horus shook his head.
"No, we do this my way. So close to the gate, Grulgor could kill us all."
"Grulgor?"
Axemand knew the name. He'd read it in casualty lists. He looked back to where the Justerin were locking their boarding shields into position. Axemand was not surprised to see Abaddon and Kyber holding flanking positions. Their shields were splashed with blood in bladed radial patterns that were not accidental.
"Ready, Ezekiel?" asked Horus of his first captain.
Abaddon slammed his shield on the floor and slotted his combi bolter into the firing notch by way of answer.
"All yours, brother,"
said Horus, moving back and taking up position at the head of the Justerin's formation. One of the Terminators locked a shield onto Lupercal's armored forearm. Against his mighty frame, it looked woefully inadequate protection. Mortarion waved forward two warriors armed with rotary missile launchers. Horus nodded, and a hammering salvo of bolter shells filled the passageway. The two Death Guards stepped forward and ripped out a volley of missiles. Warheads streaked down the passageway. Axemand heard the metallic cough detonations, shroud bombs and frags. One warrior dropped to his knees with the back of his helmet blown out. The other staggered, with most of his ribcage detonated from the inside by penetrating mass reactives.
"Lupercal!"
shouted Abaddon as Horus led the Justerin forward. Shields braced, marching in relentless lockstep, boots like mechanized pistons as they pushed into the passage. Heads down, shields out, they filled its width. Gunfire pummeled them. Not enough to stop them. Nowhere near enough to stop them. Olivia traced the patterns she'd memorized all those years ago over the surface of the gate. Each movement sent a rippling shiver of painful disgust through her. She knew what lay beyond the gate better than most. She knew how it hungered for what lay on this side. A closed gate was better than no gate, and the howling, mad, devouring things on the other side weren't about to give up even this tenuous hold without a fight. Olivia's empathic gift was now a curse. This close to the gate, every hateful thought she'd ever had was magnified. She relived the pain of every lover who'd betrayed her, every attacker who'd wounded her, and every person she'd abandoned. And not just hers. Valance and his four men knelt beside her with their rifles shouldered. They were soldiers and had a lot of bad memories. All of them crowded her thoughts, Tears streamed down her face and racking sobs spasmed in her chest. Not for the first time, she cursed in a dead language that she had been left to do this. She knew that he couldn't do it. After what he had taken from the realm beyond, it would be suicide for him to draw so near to those whose power he'd stolen. Every mantra she whispered was faltering. Every line she drew in lunar caustic was fading before she could empower it. She couldn't focus. All the years she'd spent waiting in readiness for this moment, and she couldn't bloody concentrate. Hardly surprising, really. The sound of battle was incredible. Bolters and other heavier weapons were filling the passageway with explosive rounds, but she knew it wouldn't be enough to stop the War Master. She had known that Horus would find this place eventually, but he had found it quicker than she'd hoped. She'd never agreed with the decision to obscure the existence and nature of the warp, but if Olivia's long life had taught her anything, it was that finger-pointing after the fact was beyond futile. Four ultramarines stood with her and her bodyguards, a living shield wall of flesh and ceramite. This was the only place mortals could survive. Being without armor in the midst of a Legion firefight was a sure way to end up dead. Castor Alcade owed the warriors protecting her little band to fight as though the Emperor himself stood behind them. These men would die for her. They weren't the first to do so, but she dearly hoped they'd be the last. An explosion shook the chamber, and she coughed on the acrid propellant fumes. She could taste aerosolized blood misting the air. Not good, especially with the aggression flaring from every man in the chamber. Ultramarines were all about their practical, but they had sacrificed too much to fight clinically with the cause of their hurt so close. Olivia breathed deeply, picturing Vivian and Miska. Even Jeff, with his sad hangdog eyes and absurd belief that he had to protect her. She missed them, and hoped Molech's enlightenment was already accelerating towards the system's Mandeville point. No, that wasn't helping. She needed something more, something cherished. She remembered when the auspects of a transloader from Ophir had failed, and it ran into a submerged mine in Larsa's harbour. She hadn't been on the ship, but had seen it go down with all hands. Only when she returned home did she find out that Vivian and Miska thought she'd been aboard, and they'd wept for hours, believing that she was dead. She remembered her arms wrapped around them both when they finally succumbed to sleep. Their warm breath and the smell of their hair reminded Olivia of a time long gone, of a life now ended, when she'd been blissfully ignorant of her true nature and the doom approaching Arcadia. She'd been happy then, and she used that to push down the violent thoughts intruding on her psyche. Olivia pictured the symbols she'd been shown, precise arrangements of intersecting lines that couldn't possibly intersect, curves that broke every established rule of calculus, the geometry of the insane. She spoke the words that weren't words, pouring every inch of her desire to see this gate sealed into what she was doing. Her hands described the motions she pictured moving across the surface of the smooth black barrier. It looked and felt like a solid barrier, but it wasn't. It was a scab over a hole that should never have been torn open, an impossible object that existed in an infinite number of possible existences. It was neither real nor unreal. A doorway to hell, Olivia now attempted to unmake. Her surroundings faded to grey, a monochrome facsimile of the world where she was the only splash of colour. She heard gunfire, screams of pain and explosions. All were muted and dulled, as though coming from a distant battlefield. Her hands were radiant, leaving echoes of warp light in their wake. A pattern began to emerge, disjointed knowledge seeded throughout her psyche coming together in a multidimensional lattice that was part unbreakable seal, part demo charge. She smiled, seeing the cunning that had gone into its design, the care it had taken to hide within her. So intricate was its construction, she almost didn't mind being used like this. She certainly didn't mind that its completion would kill her. A spray of blood drenched Olivia, and she cried out as one of her protectors dropped with a hole blown through the cobalt blue of his breastplate. A concussive pressure wave hit her and slammed her to the ground. A spinning fragment of hot metal sliced across her shoulder. Pain blazed as blood ran down her back. Her surroundings bled back into her awareness. The noise, the fear, and the choking clouds of smoke. She heard heavy footfalls, all thudding in unison. Short, tramping steps, and the scrape of iron on stone. Olivia rolled onto her side, blinking away tears of pain from her shoulder. Her left arm felt useless, and the stink of burned meat filled her senses. Valance lay on his back next to her. He'd taken the brunt of the blast that had knocked her to the ground. What was left of him was only recognizable by the half of his head that remained. She looked up, in time to see a ridged line of interlocking shields barge its way into the chamber. Sons of Horus with breacher's shields. The Ultramarines couldn't hope to hold their position, scattered by the missile explosions and overwhelmed by suppressive volleys. Concentrated bursts of fire took them down in twos and threes. The shield line widened as the chamber opened up. Sons of Horus warriors, following behind, pushed the line out and brought yet more guns to bear. Archidon Cairo put a hole in the shield line with coordinated blasts from the plasma one-shots on his mechanized arms. Each bolt impacted at precisely the same time and blew apart one of the shields and the warrior behind it. Massed bolter fire brought him down, a ridiculous amount of overkill that shredded his flesh unrecognizable and thoroughly dismantled his mechanical augmentations. Didicus Theron and Castor Alcade pushed into the gap Cairo had opened, looking to tear it wider. Theron's power sword cleaved through a shield and the arm holding it. His bolt pistol fired point-blank into the face of a Terminator. Such hulking war monstrosities all but eliminated the need for mortal flesh entirely. The bolts detonated on impact, but left the warrior beneath unharmed. The Terminator's crackling energy fist pistoned out and rammed through the Centurion's body. He came apart in an explosion of disembodied limbs and shattered plate. Olivia tried to drag herself back to the gate, pushing along the floor on her backside with her heels. Her work was almost done, just a little more, and her obligation would be over. No more long, wearying years, no more lies and isolation, no more anything. A towering figure broke free of the shield line. A giant, a demigod, a beautiful avatar of all that humanity could achieve in greatness. She'd heard all these epithets and more used to describe the Warmaster, but they'd been coined by those viewing him at peace. Seeing him in battle was something entirely different. Horus Lupercal was a monster, a demon of war and ruin made flesh. He was a destroyer, an unmaker, and the face humanity ought to have turned its back on millennia ago. His was the face of uttermost evil, and he didn't even know it. It was the worst thing Olivia had ever seen. Castor Alcade vaulted away from the Terminator, bearing down on him, and ran to put himself between her and the Warmaster. There was no way Alcade could defeat the Warmaster, no hope of even a fair contest. Alcade was dead the moment he moved, but he did it anyway. It was the best thing Olivia had ever seen. The legate of the 13th Legion thrust with his gladius. It snapped on the amber eye at Horus's breast. The Warmaster's titanic maul swept out, and Castor Alcade was obliterated as though he had never existed. Olivia pushed onto her feet and threw herself at the gate, her hands slippery with blood. She traced the final lines and opened her mouth to speak the last of the apotropaic words. All that came out was a scream of pain. Olivia looked down and saw four parallel blades jutting from her chest. They pinned her to the black wall and her blood ran down the blades and into the gate. "I don't know who you are, but I need that open," said the Warmaster. "Please," said Olivia as the pain finally caught up to her. Horus snapped the talons of his gauntlet from Olivia's body. She fell, and it felt like she fell for a very long time before she hit the floor. She looked up into the Warmaster's face. She saw no pity, no mercy. But curiously, she saw regret. Olivia struggled to speak, and the Warmaster knelt to hear her valediction as the life bled out of her.
"Even souls ensnared by evil maintain a small bridgehead of good," she said. "I want you to remember that at the end."
Horus looked puzzled for a moment, then smiled, and for a moment Olivia forgot that he was the enemy of humanity.
"You shouldn't put your faith in saints, mademoiselle," said Horus.
Olivia didn't reply, looking over the Warmaster's shoulder. The gateway of black obsidian was bleeding. Horus stood from the body of the dead woman. He wished she hadn't died so he could ask how she had come to be here. But she had stood against him and tried to stop him from achieving his destiny. And that was a death sentence.
"Who was she?" asked Mortarion.
"I don't know, but I felt the touch of father upon her."
"She met him?"
"Yes," said Horus. "But a long time ago, I think."
Mortarion looked up at the gate, clearly unimpressed. Horus saw his brother's expression and put a hand on his shoulder. "Don't underestimate what our father did here," said Horus. "He broke through into another realm, a realm no other being has breached and lived. Such a journey would make the climb to your first father's hall seem like a pleasant stroll." Mortarion shrugged.
"I don't much care what he did," he said.
He tapped the butt of silence against the body of the woman.
"She was here to seal the gate. Do you think she succeeded?"
Horus reached out and laid his palm flat against the black wall. He felt micro-tremors in its surface, too faint to be perceived by anyone save a Primarch. "Only one way to find out," said Horus, unsnapping the seals across his breastplate. "Take that reaper of yours and cut me."
"Cut you?"
Horus shed his armor, letting each plate fall to the ground until he stood clad only in a grey bodysuit. "I was told this gate can only open in blood," said Horus. "So cut me, and don't spare the edge."
"Sir," said Kyber, coming forward, "don't! Let one of us do it. Spill my blood. Use as much as it takes, even if it kills me."
Little Horus and Ezekiel joined their voices in opposition to his desire for Mortarion to cut him deep. Horus folded his arms and said, "Thank you, my sons. But if I've learned anything from Lorgar, it's that someone else's blood won't do for something like this. It has to be mine."
"Then let's get this done," said Mortarion,
hefting silence and readying its blade. Where some of Horus's brothers might balk at the thought of wounding him, Mortarion had no such qualms. If his brother sought to usurp him, this was his chance. Horus locked his gaze with his brother.
"Do it!"
Mortarion spun silence around his body. The blade flashed. Horus howled as the Death Lord's Reaper cut him from clavicle to pelvis. The pain was ferocious. Its savagery took him all the way back to Davin's moon and Yugan Tembar's stolen blade. Blood jetted from the wound and sprayed the black wall. Through eyes wet with pain, Horus saw unfinished sigils and arrangements of arcane significance. Their brightness was dying, washed away by the tide of his blood. The gouges his talons had torn were bleeding. His blood and the woman's mingled, and Horus saw hair-fine cracks spreading from where he'd marked the wall. He grinned through the pain. Worldbreaker swung to his shoulder.
"Time to earn your name," he said.
The Emperor's gift swung round in a sledgehammer arc and smashed the wall to shards. Absolute darkness spilled into the chamber like a physical thing, as though an ocean of dark matter filled the mountain above and was now pouring out. Horus felt hurricane winds tear at him, yet was unmoved. He felt the cold of space, a soul-deep chill that enveloped him in ice. He was alone, floating in an empty void. No stars illuminated him. He had no memory of passing through the gate, then berated himself for so literal an interpretation. The gate beneath the mountain was not a literal portal separating one space from another, but an allegorical one. Just by spilling his blood upon stone that was not stone, he had passed through. By enacting his desire with Worldbreaker, he had hurled himself heedless into the domain of gods and monsters. A realm he knew of only in myth and the ravings of lunatics, put down in prescribed texts and lurid works passed off as fiction. This was a place unconstrained by the limits of the physical world. The laws governing existence in the material world held no sway here and were endlessly flouted. Even as he came to that understanding, the void surrounding him conspired to refute that notion. A world faded up. A terrible place of bone-white sands and blood-red mountains and orange skies lit by global fires. The air tasted of ash and regret, of sorrow and fecundity. Horus heard the clash of weapons, but no battle. The plaintive cries of lovers, but no flesh. Whispers surrounded him, plotting and scheming, as he felt the cyclic entropy of his flesh. Old cells dying, new ones born to replace them. He blinked away the heat of the sky, now seeing it wasn't the orange of a reflected blaze, but the blaze itself. The heavens were on fire from horizon to horizon. A firestorm blazed over distant mountains, swollen by forks of ruby-red lightning rippling upwards from their summits. Horus felt the ground beneath him become more solid, and looked down to see that he stood within a circle of flagstones fashioned from obsidian. 8 radiating arms vanished into the far distance, and the landscape twisted in hideous ways along each of the pathways. Acres of wire grew with the moaning bodies of his closest sons, hung upon barbed spikes. Flickering lights skimmed desolate bogs that burped and hissed with the decay of rotting corpses. Silken deserts of serpentine fog banks of perfumed musks. Labyrinthine forests of claw-branched trees clung to a series of rounded hills, each with eight doors set around their circumferences. "I've travelled realms like this before," said Horus, though there was no one to hear. No one obvious, at least. Each of the four cardinal paths ended at a mountaintop fortress to rival that of the Emperor's palace. Their walls were brass and gold, bone and earth. They glimmered in the ruddy light of the firestorm. Screams issued from each of them, and booming laughter of mad gods rolled down from the peaks.
"They are mocking you,"
said a voice behind him. Horus turned, knowing what he would see. The Cruor Angelus was the red of a battlefield sunset, its armour no longer splintered and broken, its face no longer a charred nightmare of agony. The chains encircling its body were gone, but the light of extinguished suns still burned in its dead eyes.
"Why are you here?" said Horus. "I am home," said the Red Angel. "I am unbound. The cold iron Erebus hung on me has no power here, nor do the warding oaths cut into my skin. Here I am the sum of all horror, the thirster after blood, and the devourer of souls."
Horus ignored his grandstanding. "So why are they mocking me?"
"You are a mortal in a realm of gods. You are an insect of the pantheon, insignificant and unworthy of notice, a fragment of dust in the cosmic wind."
Horus sighed. "Noctua was right. All you warp things are ridiculously overwrought." Razored bone talons ripped from its gauntlets, curling horns tore from its brow.
"You are in my realm, where you will see only what we wish you to see. I can snuff you out like a candle flame, War Master."
"If you're trying to intimidate me, you're doing a poor job of it," said Horus, taking a step towards the demon. "Let me tell you what I know. You exist in both realms, but if I destroy your body, your time in my world is over." The angel laughed and stepped to meet his advance.
"Demons never die," it said.
"No, but they do get incredibly tiresome," said Horus, reaching up to wrap his hand around the Red Angel's throat. He lifted it from the ground and squeezed. Its bat, black ichor, and the fire in its eyes blazed.
"Release me!"
It roared, clawing at his arms. Blood welled from the cuts and splashed the mirror-black flagstones. Black veins of disintegrating blood vessels spread down Horus's arm at the demon's touch. He felt the internal mechanisms of his body decaying, but only crushed the demon's neck harder.
"You will die for this!"
spat the demon. "One day, perhaps," said Horus, "but not today. You weren't sent here to kill me." Horus nodded to the vast citadels in the mountains. "You're here to guide me. Your masters need me, so take me to their fortresses. Speak my name, and tell them the galaxy's new master would treat with them." Horus dropped the Red Angel, and for a moment he thought it might fly at him in a rage. Booming thunder rolled down from the mountains, bellows of anger, squeals of delight, and more sibilant whispers. A million voices swept the nightmarish landscape, and the Red Angel's claws retreated into its gauntlet.
"Very well. I will take you to the ruinous powers,"
it said with a hiss of venom that curdled the air.
"The obsidian way is the eternal road. It is perilous for flesh and soul. It is not for mortals to walk, for its dangers are..."
"Shut up," said Horus. "Just shut the hell up." Axemand cried out at the awful sensation of blindness. His helmet's auto-senses had failed the instant the War Master's hammer struck the black wall. He tore his helmet off, but was still in the dark. Not just a darkened space, but a place of utter absence, as though the very idea of light had yet to become real.
"Ezekiel!" he yelled. "Falcus! Sound off!"
No response. What had happened? Had they failed? Had Lupercal inadvertently unleashed some hideous apocalypse on them? Axemand felt as though his entire body was enveloped in viscous glue. Every breath was laden with toxins, with bile and with sweet, cloying tastes that sickened him to the core.
Ezekiel!
He yelled again.
Falcus! Sound off! Anyone!
And almost as soon as it had begun, it was over. Axemand blinked as the world came back again. He spun around, seeing the same confusion in the faces of his brothers. Even Mortarion appeared discomforted. The death shroud gathered close to their master as the Justerian looked around for someone to protect.
Where is he?
Demanded Abaddon, though Axemand wasn't sure who he was addressing.
Where is he?
Exactly where he intended, said Mortarion, looking at the black gate.
It had previously appeared to be a slab of polished obsidian, but now it was a vertical pool of black oil. Rippling concentric rings spread over its surface as though raindrops were falling on it from the other side.
"Do we go in after him?" asked Kyber.
"Do you want to die?" said Mortarion, rounding on the Widowmaker. "Only one being has passed into the warp and lived. Are you the equal of the Emperor, little man?" "How long has it been since he went in?"
said Abaddon. "Not long," said Axemand. "Moments at most."
"How do you know that?"
Axemand pointed to the ruby droplets running down the Deathlord's Reaper. "His blood is still wet on the blade." Abaddon appeared to accept his logic and nodded. He stood before the portal as though trying to drag Lupercal back with the sheer power of his will. Kyber stood with him, Abaddon's man to the last. Axemand took a breath of deep earth air. Not even the horror of Davin could have prepared him for this moment. The War Master was gone, and Axemand didn't know if he would ever see him again. A cold shard of ice entered his heart, and all the light and colour bled from the world. Was this what the Iron Tenth had felt when Ferus Manus died? Axemand felt utterly alone. No matter that his closest brothers stood with him, no matter that they had just won a great victory and fulfilled the War Master's ambitions for this world. What would they do without the War Master? No use denying that such a thing could ever happen. Fulgrim's slaying of Manus proved a Primarch could die. Who else but the War Master had the strength of will to lead the Sons of Horus? Who among the true sons could achieve what Horus had failed to achieve? Horus is weak. Horus is a fool. The word struck him like a blow. They were without source, yet Axemand knew they had issued from beyond the Black Gate, delivered straight to the heart of his skull like an executioner's dagger. He blinked and saw a time long ago or yet to pass, an echoing empty wasteland of a world. He imagined a death, alone, far away from everything he had once held dear, dying with a former brother at his feet whose cruel wounds bled out onto the dust of a nameless rock. Breath sounded in his ear, cold and measured, the breath of nightmares he'd thought banished with the ghost of Gavia Loken. A fist of iron took Axeman's heart and crushed it within his chest. He couldn't breathe. Transhuman dread. He'd felt it briefly on Dwell, and now it all but overpowered him. The feeling passed as a bitter wind blew from the gateway.
"Stand to!"
yelled Abaddon.
"Something's happening!"
Every weapon in the chamber snapped to aim at the portal. Its surface no longer rippled with the gentle fall of raindrops, but the violence of an ocean tempest. Horus Lupercal fell through the oil-black surface of the gate and crashed to his knees before Abaddon and Kyber. Behind him, the darkness of the gate vanished with a bang of displaced air. Only a solid wall of mountain rock remained, as though the gate had never existed. Axemand rushed forward to help them as the War Master held himself upright on all fours. His back heaved with breath, like a man trapped in a vacuum suddenly returned to atmosphere.
"Sir,"
said Abaddon.
"Sir, are you all right?"
Even through his gauntlets, Axemand felt the glacial ice of the War Master's flesh.
"You're still here," said Horus, without looking up, his voice little better than a parched whisper.
"You waited for me, after all this time."
"Of course we waited," said Axemand. "You've only been gone moments."
"Moments,"
said Horus, with a fragile, almost frantic edge to his words.
"Then everything... everything's still to be done."
Axemand looked over at Abaddon, seeking the same lingering doubt in the face of the first captain. None of them had the faintest clue as to what might happen beyond the gate, or what the consequences of venturing into such an alien environment might be. They had let their lord and master walk into the unknown, and not one of them had known what to expect. That lack of forethought now horrified Axemand.
Brother,
said Mortarion, cutting through Axemand's self-recrimination, did you find what you were looking for? Horus stood to his full height, and Axemand's eyes widened at the sight of him. The War Master had aged. Chthonia had shaped him, moulded him into a warrior of flint-hard lines and cruel beauty. 2 centuries of war had left no mark upon him, but moments beyond the gate had done what the passage of time could not. Silver streaked the stubble upon his scalp, and the grooves at the corners of his eyes were deeper and more pronounced. The face Axemand had devoted his life to serving was now that of an ancient warrior who had fought for longer than he could ever have imagined, who had seen too much horror, and whose campaigning days had bled him dry. Yet the fire and purpose in his eyes was brighter than ever. Nor was that fire simply confined to his eyes. What Axemand had taken to be cold flesh was the power of the Empyrean distilled and honed within the body of an immortal being. Horus stood taller, fuller, and more powerfully than before. Lupercal had always found War Master to be an awkward fit, a term never fully bedded in or taken as read. Now he owned the title, as though it had been his long before there was any such office to take. He was now, naturally and without equivocation, the War Master. Axemand, Abaddon, and Kyber backed away from Horus, each of them dropping to their knees in wonder as the power filling the Primarch bloomed in the material world. Even Mortarion, that most truculent of Primarchs, bent the knee to Horus in a way he had never done for the Emperor. Horus grinned, and all trace of the war-weary ancient was banished in the blink of an eye. In his place was a mortal god, brighter and more dangerous than ever, filled with a power that only one other being in all existence had wielded before.
Yes, said Horus, I found exactly what I was looking for.